The following program is sponsored by Linda's Construction. This is the WCCO Home Improvement Show, brought to you by Linda's Construction. One call, one contractor. Linda's Construction provides Minnesota and Wisconsin with the best products and workmanship. They provide leaf guard gutters, asphalt roofing, metal roofing, season guard replacement windows, exterior siding, remodeling, new construction, and more. If you've got questions, they've got answers this hour. Here's Denny Long and Andy Lindis.
And good morning. Andy's taking the day off today. A lucky guy. He's got some sunshine. But we have some sunshine in the studio in the form. How'd you like that segue?
That was pretty good.
Barry Strands is back with us. And as you know, if you're familiar and join us on the show from time to time, Barry knows his stuff. For those that maybe are joining us for the first time, you've been in the construction business, dare I ask
you. Oh, my stars. Every time you bring this up, it's like, oh, Denny, 1972 is when I began my illustrious career.
How about that?
As a framing carpenter working for my granddad. $1.75 an hour. It was the gravy train financially.
But what would you say now, over the years now, what is your forte? Is it carpentry?
Well, I don't know. That's an interesting question. People who know me, who've watched me carpenter, they think, oh, he's a master carpenter. And I just look at that and go, if you just learn and then make mistakes and then learn from them, you just get better and better. And I do tile and you know, stone, and now I cut countertops and build cabinetry, and mostly stuff with wood. I'm lousy at an internal combustion engine, let's just say. If they made them out of red oak, then maybe there was hope for me, but they don't. So there's some things people say, oh, you have a great mechanical aptitude. I'm like, yeah, no, it's pretty much wood, you know. So I just finished working on my dining room, and I've got this wonderful raised panel detail. I have this 1905 home that I'm trying to restore.
Wow.
As one of these turn-of-the-century Victorian-era houses. And so I started messing around with some salvaged oak. So get this. I have a house that I'm managing for a renovation for Kyle Hunt and Partners, and it's on Minnetonka, and they had all of this red oak, and the owners came in and like, we don't like this. We want to enamel everything. And the oak doesn't enamel very well.
Doesn't it?
Oh, you see all the grain when you enamel it, unless you fill it. And it's an expensive process.
Yeah.
So I'm like, well, here, 12 and 13 inches wide planks, and then a bunch of 6-inch stock. And I'm like, well, you know, put these alongside the dumpster because I know a guy who might want these. I took them home and pulled the nails and flipped them over, sanded them smooth, and turned them into raised panels. And
that's kind of a big deal these days, isn't it? What do they call that lumber? That reclaimed.
Well, and this is not. No, this is only 20 years old.
Oh, yeah. So
this
it's
wasn't.
Not real old.
Yeah, it wasn't like Lake Superior logs that were being dredged from 100 years ago, which are $16 a board foot right now. So it's not that. But it ended up turning out really great. And to get it finished, anytime I get something done at my own house, there's a sensation of celebration.
I bet.
I don't know if anyone else cares. They walk right by. Hey, I got this done. Dad, shut up. You know, we don't care. But I love the idea of, oh, that's not – I don't have to think about that anymore. That's complete.
Well,
now.
Besides that, again, for newer listeners, that maybe those that haven't joined us from time to time, you teach as well.
Yep. I teach for Professional Education Resources, proedresource.com. So they're great. We have fun talking about contractor stuff and real estate stuff. New code coming in the spring, we think.
How long has it been since that's happened?
Well, we're on a 6-year cycle in Minnesota. Oh, okay. So 2015 is the last code adoption of the 2012 International Residential Code. And we're looking at a new code coming, which will mean a number of things for primarily, the deck section is expanding dramatically. Right now, it's about 2.5 pages in the code. It'll go to 10 pages of information on decks. It isn't making things more restrictive. It's making things more clear.
Oh,
which is beautiful because now you're going to learn, oh, this is what they intended. This is what we're trying to accomplish. That wasn't always understood from the current volume of code. So inspectors would take someone in. Let's just say you're laying out deck material, joists, we would call them. Most commonly treated lumber is used for that in Minnesota climate and around the world. What we assume is a 16-inch on-center distance for normal lumber. You could go to 24 if you use 2x6, let's say cedar. Most folks don't like the deflection or the sag in between.
Right.
But when you go to something that is plastic-based, one of the no-maintenance deck materials, some of those are not designed to span a 16-inch on-center spacing, and so you need them every 12 inches on-center. those kinds of things are now becoming clear in the code that that material is spec'd correctly.
Oh, okay, for the for that type of low maintenance stuff.
Yeah, and we just need to be aware of it when we purchase so that we know that we've laid out our deck lumber correctly from the framing standpoint. People do that wrongly, and they're like, I think I'm going to be using this material, and then they change to a different brand, and they don't have the right spacing on the framing that they've done. If you spend a couple weekends framing out a deck and think you're finished and then haven't really selected your finished tread material or your decking surface, those kinds of questions come up to haunt you a little bit.
I bet. Well, let's invite our listeners to join in. If you have any kind of a home improvement question, by all means, you want to contact Barry, either by phone or by text. We've cleared the lines, 651-989-9226, 651-989-9226. The text number is 81807. Barry Strand's filling in for Andy Lindis today. So call us or text us. Speaking of decks, now, is that something you've done in your career, build decks?
Oh, sure.
A lot?
Yeah. Well, not as much as some people who are exclusively in the world, but it has the benefits of real quick performance or production. You can see the results. So it's a lot of fun to build one. And I had a chance in a one job in Edina to actually design this deck that was fairly substantial. They wanted a big arched trellis over the top of it, and then they wanted a seating area adjacent to it, and then they wanted a spot for their hot tub adjacent to the seating area. So this was a deck that kind of flowed into these other spaces, and one was a 2x2 picket rail, and then it joined into a solid walled rail where they had the hot tub, had to have special structural design underneath it to support the weight of the water in the tub. So it got to be pretty extensive, but it was a blast to design something and then see it materialize. And then when I took the final pictures of it, I was like, oh, I got to both design and build this. And I'm telling you, it's like a little kid going, it was so exciting for me to be in that position of having to see a creation in my brain.
Yeah.
And I actually got to be the labor to build it. So they hired me. When they saw the design, they hired me to build it too. And it was like, oh, this is such a good time.
So now, beginning to end?
Yes.
You were there.
And this was for a house in Edina for a builder. This was not my house. I mean, my deck in my backyard isn't elaborate. I live in northeast Minneapolis on a small little lot with – when you have this many children as I do, you know, you're fighting to pay for milk, not cool, elaborate deck materials.
Exactly.
And I salvage a lot of stuff on the job site and go, hey, you don't want that? Well, I do.
That's great to recycle that. Yeah.
There's a sensation of joy for me when you take something that others are going to cast away and you find that it has real value.
Yes.
And then can turn it into something beautiful. I think that's a human kind of thing. I have the same thing going with humanity, too.
Well, that's kind of
Don't throw yourself into a pile. Well, you're valuable.
Especially when you think about how many appliances are kind of throwaway.
Oh, dude. It's so funny. I have a double oven that was not quite the brand that the owners wanted when they did a renovation of their kitchen. So they spent $125,000 to remodel their kitchen, and they didn't need their double oven anymore. I'm like, if it's set up by the dumpster, can I take it home? Well, I'll just take it, you know. So I've got a cooktop. I've got a double wall oven with a microwave combo.
Oh, neat.
You know, and a convection oven. I mean, this is a cool oven. And I've got a refrigerator. And for all of my appliances, I spent $500 for everything.
So
salvaging stuff and buying scratch and dent.
Smart shopping.
Well, you have to be. Again, you have to pay for life.
Yeah,
I got kids
right, with
braces.
Right. We have callers and we have Texas, Barry. Before we take a break, Jerry's in St. Paul, I believe, with the question. Jerry, you're on CCO with Barry.
Yes, sir. Barry, I have two questions
sure,
for
Jay.
You. If I put in a whole house water filter in my home, what percentage of loss am I going to get for water pressure, 20%, 50%, whatever? And the other question is, if I have hard water and I put in a whole house water filter, do I still need a water softener?
Those are two different kinds of questions that are going to need to be looked at. The brand that you put in will give you what's called a flow rate, and you'll have to take a look at that because typically when we purify water on a whole house system, there's a reduction in pressure. We just don't have the same volume coming through as a result. And if it's a reverse osmosis system or something similar, there will be some reduction in pressure. But I can't tell you offhand, Jerry, what that value would be. It would be needed to look at from the specific brand that you spec. Same thing with the type of filtration that you get. So you look at the hardness minerals, calcium and magnesium, and most of those will be screened by a reverse osmosis system. You don't get all the hardness minerals out when you use charcoal activation. So some systems do both, using both RO and charcoal. charcoal, some don't. So it's really system specific. And as much as I'd like to answer your question for you, it will depend on the brand that you choose. And my advice would be to research brands and then discuss with the seller, whoever that might be, exactly what's taken out to get an accurate answer for the system that you're looking at. It's a great question, though, Jerry. Thanks for calling
Variables are there, for sure. All right, I'll tell you what, Barry, we need to take a quick break. Thank you, Jerry. 651-989-9226 for your home improvement question for Barry Strands, or send a text, and we'll grab some of those, too, when we come back. And good morning. Welcome back to our Home Improvement Show, presented every week by our friends at Linda's Construction, L-I-N-D-U-S. You want to get in touch with those good folks, you can call them, 1-800-LEAF-GUARD, or get on the web, lindasconstruction.com. They've got some good deals going on, as you know, Barry, right now with windows and GAF roofing.
Yes.
What else?
Well, they told me about those, and I was supposed to look them up before I showed up so that I could talk about them intelligently. Now, why don't you stall for a minute?
No, because there's I'm thinking.
I'll have it for next week.
Well, there's the great GAF roofing.
Yep.
We're talking about 50% off installation labor on the roofing,
yep,
on the windows, and on the leaf guard gutters.
What a great opportunity to take advantage of a savings season. It's good. And get in the queue.
Oh, I tell
you. Because things are getting busy. Things are heating up.
Big time.
And you don't want to wait until it's too late.
Big time busy. All right. Now, we welcome our listeners' questions, either by phone or by text, and we have some of both, so maybe we should get to those good listeners. Shall we?
Yeah, let's try.
All right. Ann in Minnetonka is first up here. Ann, what is your question for Barry?
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
The corner of the crown of my chimney has come off, and I'm wondering who I should contact for a repair, I'm assuming.
Sure. Well, typically you're going to go to a brick mason or someone who works in the stone industry, and there's a number of companies that do a great job of that. That repair process, I would just remind you, while it might be a small amount of physical damage, it is not going to be an inexpensive repair because of its location, the setup, and the safety required. So if it's a one-story home with a walkable roof, the price will be reasonable. If you're into a two-story with a steeply pitched roof, the price goes up geometrically. Let me just try to explain. And if you feel like there's sticker shock when you get a bid from a stone contractor, you'll understand a little bit about why. But brick and stone masons do that work, and that's a great place to go as a resource.
I wonder if they're as hard to find artists like that as other tradespeople.
The challenge is that they're in high demand.
I bet.
So we have a number of vendors that we use who do this work, but because they know us and because we do a lot of work with them, we get a pretty quick response time. But when they get busy, they can be out three or 4 weeks, even to come out and look at the work, then the process of getting a price, and then the process of scheduling the work to be completed. When the season heats up, it's really challenging to get people to come and do something that small, particularly. So small repairs, there's just not enough margin in them to make it worth the company's time. So sometimes we find handy people who have a background in stonework who can do that. But that's tough for me to sit and recommend somebody like that. You'd have to know them very well before you could say, here, use them. But bigger construction companies have a hard time fitting those kinds of things into their workflow.
What's the phrase when I hear tuck pointing? Is that part of that job?
Absolutely, yeah. And tuck pointing really means that the mortar between stone or brick has come loose, and we're going to scrape out deteriorated mortar and remortar those joints. And we have that with stone foundations in our older houses.
Sure.
We have that certainly with brick on the exterior walls of homes, and certainly chimneys, which are subject to freeze-thaw cycles. Plus, when we have gas-fired furnaces or fireplaces, there is a tendency for that gas exhaust to deteriorate the mortar on the chimney liner if it's an old red clay tile and if what was converted, you know, from a former system. And we end up with some deterioration that we didn't anticipate above the roof line. And then with freeze-thaw in Minnesota, that combination can create some significant mortar deterioration. I have some pictures of my first house I purchased, and the chimney had to just be taken out.
No kidding, the whole thing.
Well, I didn't. I ended up putting in a different furnace and a different water heater, so I vented them off the sidewall. So I went to a 90% efficiency in those systems. I didn't need then that exhaust port. But, you know, when you try to take out a 24 by 24 inch chimney in the middle of your house, and some of our listeners, I'm sure, have either done this or thought about it, when you're remodeling, you know, these older 1950s and earlier homes, you're like, that's in the way of my kitchen design layout. And I decided I wasn't going to let that be in the way, but what a pain. And then I had this brilliant idea, Danny, that I should start on my first floor and just, if I would just knock the support out, the whole thing would fall down. And I could wheelbarrow it out to a dumpster on the street. It would be so much easier.
How'd that movie work out?
Yeah. Dennis, it was so bad. I got this thing to fall down like I expected, but I snapped a floor joist in the process my floor. That much load. It was one of the most boneheaded things I've ever done. You learn from being stupid sometimes.
That's true.
It was easier to get it to the dumpster, but I will never forget my daughter standing there as this cloud of old dust is moving through that space, and she's like, "Dad, Dad, it's like a mushroom cloud." I'm like, "Let's get out of here." Not a good moment.
All right, tell you, before we break, Tom is calling from Shoreview. I think he has a deck question. Go ahead, Tom. Thank you.
Hi, Barry. Thank you so much, you guys. We're building a deck, and I'm just looking at all the options, and I think we've got it down to either cedar with aluminum rails or a composite. And the composite, of course, is very expensive, but I like the idea of not doing the maintenance. Just wondering if you have some thoughts about either the cedar with the aluminum railing or the composite. And we're looking at AZEK or Trex for composite. So I'm just wrestling with that, wondering what you have for advice.
Tom, it's a really, I mean, I wrestle with it too. I get asked this question frequently, and I have the same kind of struggle with it. If you don't want the maintenance, and maintenance really just annoys you, go with composite. You'll be glad that you did. Warning, I'm just reminding people, if you go to a dark color in any of the composites, those things get so hot in the middle of a Minnesota July, you will not be going barefoot on your deck on a sunny day. You will not. They will clip-flops. You're thinking to yourself, what was I thinking? So mid-tones and lighter if you want to actually use the deck in the months that you will be outdoors. And I know that some of these darker colors are gorgeous and they flip and offset the house beautifully, but they don't live very well in real life. So that's a caution on that product. And then again, your framing needs to change in some cases. So be careful around your steps. If you have a whole wraparound, let's say step down to your yard, make sure you get the structure in place for the composite decking surface materials. We use cedar all the time and we use Ipe. Ipe is outrageously expensive, but it's phenomenal. I love it as a wood.
That's really hard wood.
It's really hard, yeah. And it can handle longer span distances for structure. And if you stain it the right color, it looks like walnut on your deck.
Ooh,
I mean, it's just
wow.
Glorious. And there are some other exotic, we'll call them hardwoods, that are available as well. But price points normally scare people away.
Yeah.
It's about twice the price of cedar. But we still see a lot of people using cedar. We put it on, you know, multi-million dollar homes
sure. As
an option. And most folks let it weather. They don't try to stain it. They don't try to color it. They just let it go.
Let it go.
Gray. Yeah, and that solves the maintenance cycle.
Barry, we need to take a break. Another half hour of the show to go. So if you callers, stay on the line. Texters, we're going to pick up on your questions as well. 651-989-9226. Again, the text number, if you want to do that method, is 81807 for your text messages. And good morning. Welcome back to our Home Improvement Show brought to us by our friends at Linda's Construction. Andy's taking the day off today. In place of Andy, our friend Barry Strands is accepting your phone calls and text messages. I do have a line open if you want to ask Barry your question. 651-989-9226 and text number 81807. Barry, we'll grab some text messages after we talk to Oscar, who's calling in from Pine City. I believe, Oscar, you're on with Barry.
Yeah, Mary, I've got an older two-story home that's got radiator heat in it, and I would like to put in some kind of a central air system so that I don't have to use window air conditioners.
Sure. Well, you have really two options. You have the option of going up into an attic space and using a high-velocity downdraft, which is commonly done, and we end up using a narrow small, about a 3.5-inch pipe that can fit inside 2x4 wall cavities or create additional spaces like in the back corner of a closet and drop down. But there's a lot of issues relative to getting the cold air into various spaces, and you need access. So the other option is to use a split system and put a panel on the surface of an interior wall and let the AC come through that. And that split option is typically done in those kind of applications. But to look at your house's specific layout and then to understand what would be best would be something that you would want to contact a heating, ventilation, and air conditioning supplier and specifically look at your home, have them come out. Typically, they'll do a free consultation to see what system would be most appropriate for the structure in your home. It's very doable, but because of the the way we would have framed it originally, the high velocity downdrafts really only work from a financial standpoint if you're doing some type of additional remodeling or you've got easy pathways. Most people will opt for a split system and will put then a couple of units in place for the various levels inside the home. Getting that cold air to then move through the house becomes the additional challenge. But it's worth looking into, Oscar.
Yeah, that, a lot of people I've heard, friends of mine, have done that very thing with older homes that are gas hot water. It's
yep.
amazing what can be done.
It is. It just is. It's a price point. Again, sticker shock
oh,
is what
sure.
a lot of people are like, are you kidding me? And then yeah. if they ask them to explain it, company has to make a profit. You got to pay for your labor. And then you get inside the home and start messing with physical spaces
yeah.
inside there. And then your repair costs of walls or ceilings becomes another big chunk of the price point. So some people are like, I can't believe it's this expensive.
Yeah.
But if you've got a very nice home on a lake, for example, it doesn't have AC, people walk in and say, I'm not spending $1.5 million on this house unless I've got air conditioning.
Sure.
The house is built turn of the century. You're going to need to add it, even if it costs you quite a bit of money.
That's right. That's the trade-off. 651-989-9226. Thank you, Oscars. Text is 81807. Here's a text. How do I prepare a plywood subfloor to install laminate flooring? The original subfloor is a little uneven in areas where they were butted together by seam. The flooring I purchased has an attached pad. Should I put additional pad down? This is for a second-level bedroom.
That's a good question. A couple of things to consider. Number one, based on data construction, if it was built since about 1990, typically the subfloor was 3/4-inch tongue-and-groove plywood or oriented strand board. If that's the case, then I would go to a rental supply company. Some of the big boxes have rental places and get a floor sanding machine that's used. Kind of we use an edger tool typically, and we can grind down high seams that way. And by sanding things flat, we're done. That's all I would do to those surfaces, and I would not put additional underlayment. But if you don't level the floor, the other option is to put a topical floor leveling compound on top of that. It's a messy process, and because you're maybe doing this in one room or down a hallway, it gets to be very difficult to use a self-leveling. That's another option, but I would look first to try sanding high seams down and making them flat. Then I would just install the laminate flooring the way the manufacturer recommended on a prepped floor bed. Keep in mind that most manufacturers of laminate flooring will void warranties based on sags or high spots in the floor. They just won't warrant it. And when you read the fine print, they want the floor to be almost dead flat before they'll warrant product over time. Now, again, it's fine print. We never read that when we're buying material.
It's true.
But then we go, oh, there's a problem. I can see this butt seam, or I can see an edge, or it popped in some way. We go back to the manufacturer, and they say, well, you know, you didn't have a floor that was perfect, and therefore we won't warrant our material. It's worth always paying attention to those things. Most folks don't realize that the manufacturers have written warranties designed to protect them. And because of that, you don't get as much warranty as you expect you have.
Read that fine print, as usual. 651-989-9226. Send us a text if you like, 81807. Here's another one, Barry, if I can get to it. Here it is. Trying to put up shelving brackets in a poured concrete storage room. I have gone through concrete drill bits and bolts have broken. What do you recommend?
Oh, boy. Okay, well, I still think TAPCON screws are your best option to put anchors into concrete. And yet, as concrete ages, it continues to harden, and it's very brittle. So you just have to upgrade the quality. If I go to a home improvement center and look and find the cheapest masonry bit that they have, I won't use those. You can get a diamond bit that will be able to stand up this process, and if you spend a little bit more money on your anchors, you're going to wear them when you start drilling a number of holes. It's just the nature of the beast. Concrete's a hard material, but I don't have any other solution to that. Can some people put glued on pieces of lumber and then attach their brackets to that? Sure you can, but then you got to still attach the wood, which is going to mean glue and more screws. So one way or the other, you're going to have to get into that surface. And some guys shoot stuff on the wall first, and I'm still a believer that if you're careful and you upgrade the quality of your masonry drill bit, then you will solve your problem.
And again, that's kind of true. You get what you pay for there.
Yeah, and guys who do this commercially, they don't mess around. They go get the expensive stuff, but then they can reuse it. And guys who do it like on weekend warriors like me at my own house, you know, we just don't want to spend the money. We don't want to have to triple the cost of our drill bit in order to get more mileage out of it. But that's what he's going to have to do, or she's going to have to do in this case.
Yep. Now, I should know this, and maybe next week when Luke Panic, the deck guy from Lindis, comes in, does Barry know of anyone or a company that would come in and refinish a wood deck? I'm trying to think if Lindis does that. I know they know people.
Sure, and I don't know. That's something I have to ask Andy if they're doing that or not. Refinishing deck materials is really kind of the prerogative of painters. So they'll come in, sand everything out, and refinish that material with typically it's cedar, or maybe it's southern yellow pine or red pine. Getting into the queue is critical, and finding companies are doing that. Again, most painters, anybody who's painting for builders right now is swamped because we're coming to the spring season, and everything that didn't get done last fall is now on the docket to get done in the spring. And it's just nuts out there to find painters who aren't, you know, too terribly busy. But you keep pounding away. By the way, I would just suggest this. When you call someone and they don't return your call, call them again. You call them three times, they know you're serious.
Oh, I see.
Because
a lot
of guys get calls, and they're like, well, it's just someone's just looking for information.
Just testing the water.
Yes. But if you go, hey, I've heard you're good. I want to talk to you. Just keep going after them. Eventually, they'll pick up. You know, and then you find out, well, if they don't call me right back, then they're in a good contractor. Some of them are good and just horribly busy, and they just can't. They don't know how to handle it.
I know that by the way, if you're just joining us, Barry Strand's filling in for Andy Lindis today. You, as an overseer in building and remodeling those great homes that you are privileged to work around.
Yeah, that's true.
That's got to be frustrating at times, though, because there's so many variables of the different subs or the different tradespeople that need to get in. You got to kind of do a lot of juggling, don't you?
Well, let's just take a look at the real world. Recent example, you have something shift for someone else on another job due to weather. You schedule them. They're supposed to come on Thursday, let's say this week. Like, that's real, right? But because of the rain we got Monday, Tuesday, they don't get to that job site because they're backed up on the one they were on. So I have them scheduled for Thursday, and they're like, I can't get there Thursday because we didn't finish the work that we had set up to schedule this week. So we'll be on our job site Thursday, Friday, finishing our stuff. We can't get to you till Monday. So now the homeowner goes, in fact, had this conversation this week, why is nobody here?
Yeah.
It's like, well, I didn't give them the long explanation. I told them they were coming Monday because they'll be there Monday. But what they're doing is they're wrapping up from the rain that killed them Monday, Tuesday.
It's the whole domino effect.
It absolutely is. And until I have them in, I can't have the roofer in. So I had the roofer scheduled for Monday. I have to push the roofer back to Friday because I don't have my soffit and fascia material in place because it rained. And you try to get people to understand that, and they're like, yeah, but. You know, because obviously for all of us, the thing in front of us is the most important thing to us, right?
Of course.
And if you're running five jobs trying to juggle what's taking place, it just gets to be one of those dilemmas that gives me an opportunity to get better and better and better at it and still try to help people understand what's something's out of your control. You can't do. You can't solve that one.
As a homeowner, one thing, but as a site supervisor, as you are, I bet it makes you feel good when you find somebody like I did, like an electrician that's good. And I think, wow, I can rely on this person.
Yeah, I've got, in fact, the job I'm working on right now, one of the big ones, the electrician knows the homeowner, knows the style of operation, the way he thinks. And working with this guy has just been a pleasure because he does most of the thinking that's necessary for me because he understands what needs to happen. So I don't have to come back in and babysit and then think and then respond and then think and then respond.
Sure.
He knows. And that's not always the case. You're always looking to upgrade what we call the vendor pool, the number of people that our company hires to come and do specific subcontract trades. And the obvious issue is guys who get really, really good at what they do, they can charge more because they're really good and they're in high demand. Their price goes up. Well, if people think they're Picasso and want to get paid like Picasso and can get Picasso dollars, that's fantastic. Yeah. The problem is our customer doesn't want to pay Picasso dollars for someone who's just doing plumbing.
Yeah.
So they're like, okay, we know how good they are, but when we're looking at trying to bid competitively, we want to be able to help them find someone who can do the work. It's plumbing. When you're done and flush, it goes downhill.
It works.
Right?
Yeah.
So when we think of someone as being the Mercedes in the plumbing family, it doesn't mean that the homeowner perceives that same value.
Yeah.
So they want to get paid more, and they can, but we can't pay them more. And as a result, we have to find someone who can do the same quality work, but maybe doesn't have the same communication skills or that kind of thing, and end up spending more time on the job site. I call it babysitting, but that's probably a derogatory term. Managing the process. Let's call it
that. I like that better.
Is that better?
Yes.
Better
yes,
than babysitting.
Yes, yes, yes.
Yeah.
It was fun finding at my house. I know we have to take a break, but I found Matt and his brother Johnny, electrician. I think he's got to be one of the youngest journeyman electricians. But it's really great to see somebody who's talented and treats their employees so well.
Yeah. Yeah, it is amazing when you've got someone who can manage humans,
yes,
and in a way that is respectful and encouraging, yeah, at the same time helps develop skill when there's a need for growth.
Yeah.
That's a real tough human skill, and I think it's really, really great when you're around people like that.
Absolutely. All right, Barry, we need to take a quick break. We have more show to come, so don't go away. Callers, texters, we're going to talk more home improvement here. 53 degrees sunshine here on CCO. And good morning. Welcome back to CCO's Home Improvement Show, brought to us by our friends at Lindus Construction, L-I-N-D-U-S. You want to get in touch? LindusConstruction.com or call them at 1-800-LEAF-GUARD. Andy's taking the day off today. Barry Stranz is with us today. And you and I were talking, looking forward to this. I can hardly believe we're going to be talking about a celebration, a 40th anniversary celebration, right?
Can you believe it? 40th anniversary
I was
for
there for
Lindus
the 30th
Construction.
There.
I did not yet have this relationship with them.
Right.
I knew Andy's dad, Kevin,
yeah,
from class, but I had not done radio with them before. But they're doing something really cool out at their headquarters in Wisconsin. From on June 1st, between 9 o'clock and 2 o'clock, they're going to do food. And
yep,
$50,000 in giveaways. They'll have manufacturers' booths, and they're going to have stuff for the kids to do. And all listeners are invited.
Yeah, this is not just private. This
no.
is everybody.
Isn't
yeah.
that crazy?
Yeah, we're going to be doing the show from there. Steve Thompson will be filling in on my earlier shows, but I'm going to be heading out to Baldwin.
To do the Lindus show
yeah.
from that. Have you been to that space?
I have.
Yeah, it's awesome, isn't it?
Oh, it really is.
Yeah.
And I remember years ago, but it's hard to believe that 10 years have passed. And it's their 40th anniversary, so we will. And trust me, as you know, if it's Lindus, there'll be food there.
Oh my goodness, yes,
a lot
they
of
do
food.
It right, don't they?
They really do.
Yeah, they take good care of their folks.
So that's June 1st. It's a Saturday,
correct?
And we again, what from 9 till 2? You
from
said
from 9 till 2.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
And our show, of course, will be from 9 to 10. On the broadcasting live from Baldwin, Wisconsin.
Yeah, and I'll be there if I can. Though my only issue is that I might have a graduation hosting issue. My daughter hasn't locked it down yet.
Well, that's a big deal.
My wife
big
is listening, going,
itself.
"Hey, we have a graduation on that day. You don't say you're going to be someplace you can't be."
Yeah, you don't get in trouble.
No, exactly.
But again, I'm glad you brought that up because we'll remind our listeners next Saturday as well. Getting close. Yeah, June 1.
June 1st.
All right. Let's see. There are text messages that I want to get to. Wow, more have come in. So
look at your
there.
Screen, Danny. There's stuff to do. Let's go.
We'll have to do. We'll do a lightning round here.
All right, good.
Bought a used 10x30 deck already built for $700. Great price, and now going to put it in place. Was going to do freestanding. Now I want to also put up a pergola on the deck. Should I now do footings?
Yes is the answer. As soon as you put that pergola up and create additional weight, you need to make sure your soils can bear it. Now, you attach to the house, you're required to put footings on. If it's a freestanding, you're not, okay, unless it's a primary access to the house. But the weight of the pergola will dictate the best response. So my discussion would be if you're going to put on a roof structure of any kind, you are always smart to bear that on footings.
Makes sense. Texter says, can a porcelain floor in a sun porch be used as a subfloor if I want to put in a new floor?
Well, if you've got porcelain tile on a surface, you can go over that with something else. Yes. The question is, what happens at the elevation to doorways?
Yeah.
Those are becoming the critical issues where you don't want to create a trip hazard. So the finished floor material will dictate whether I would do that. I generally always assume it's best practice to rip off a finished floor surface, get back down to the substructure, and work from there. But it's a lot more labor.
It is.
And if you're doing the labor not paying for it, then it's just a Saturday of working. And if you can live with that, I think it's the best choice. So in my mind, that's where I would go. But the sub base is critical. If it's a concrete mud bed and you have porcelain tile, that's not any fun to rip out.
Oh, no.
But it's very doable for, again, a couple people for a day.
All right. See if we have time. Yes, I think we do for another text. Building a new home that will have painted brick veneer exterior. Is there a best way to install/paint the brick veneer for long-term durability?
Well, whenever we paint brick, we have to understand that brick breathes. We need something that's designed to adhere to the masonry, the lime that would be part of the brick material. So long as we don't assume that we can throw a standard latex paint on that surface, we should be fine. We paint brick all the time, but we need to use something that's designed with an adhesive that is compatible with the material in the brick itself. So we've used a product called ThoroSeal for that kind of treatment. There are a number of different paints that are designed, and most manufacturing brands, all the major brands, have something specific for painting brick and masonry.
Okay.
And you'd want to use that.
We have about 60 seconds to go, Barry. See if we can get a quick one here. We have an older redwood deck that's dirty, has some mossy growth. Some of the decking is, quote, eroded from pressure washing years ago. Can I use a floor sander on it?
Sure, you can use a sander. The question is, the condition will tell you how quickly you move through that. You've got to be so careful. Redwood, especially cedars, are very, very soft, and they will sand quickly. Orbitals take too long. That's the problem, to get a large surface area in the deck. But that'd be my recommendation. I would start with an orbital, a small handheld orbital sander, and maybe just use a 60 grit paper and see where that takes me.
Oh,
and
yeah.
That would give me a test area to work off of.
Test it out.
And then if that's not too abrasive, then if you put a drum sander on there or an edging sander on there, you have to understand that you're going to leave swirl marks. You've got to be very, very careful with softwoods when you sand them.
Barry, always a pleasure to have you in studio.
I love being here.
You're going to be back here, what, two weeks from today?
Yeah, 2 weeks from today. We'll take more questions and have more fun.
Good deal. All right. Thanks, Barry Strands. We'll be back a couple of weeks from today. And Luke Panic, the deck guy, will be here next Saturday. So get those decking questions ready for next Saturday.